Livewire with Jeff Dorset.
So it's a great pleasure some years ago, 2015, when I was invited to Palm Desert by the leader of the Wrecking Crew, Hal Blaine, and also a drummer, as we know, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm looking around my studio to see all his awards that he actually gave me copies of, and a wonderful day was spent there. But now I've got an opportunity talking to another great legend, Carl Palmer. How are you, Carl?
Very well, Jeff. How are you?
Yeah, good stuff. So you can relate to Hal Blaine, can't you, in the Wrecking Crew?
No, I've never been a session musician in my life, so I don't, you know, I know of him, but that's not something, it's not a field that I decided to go into. I decided to go into, like, playing in a band and developing something and taking it from there. I was never available, I was never a hired gun. But, you know, there's no problem in being the way Hal was, and he did a great job.
Sure. But, of course, what a good call to form part with Keith and Greg.
That was just purely a journalist's sort of dream. Never happened. We never played with Jimmy. He never turned up, never rehearsed, was never really talked about.
Yeah, but of course, when you went on to become Emerson, Lake and Palmer, one of the biggest bands of their time.
Yeah, if you say that, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody ever relates to it there. Absolutely terrific stuff. So that was wonderful. But of course, you know, your track record before getting into that was doing some other material I didn't realise for a while, like Atomic Rooster and Crazy World of Arthur Brown.
Crazy World of Arthur Brown was first. That was in 68. I joined Arthur Brown. We had a number one single in America, and that was a lot of fun. I actually did make some demos for Arthur in the early days, just as a friendship thing. You know, I wasn't really out for, like, being a session musician, as I mentioned to you earlier. Anyway, when they lost their drummer, Dracian Seeker, they called me and asked me if I wanted to fly over, and they made me a full member of the band, and I was with the band when they had their number one single and album at the same time. So that was a lot of pressure, first time in America when you're 18, but a big learning curve. It didn't last for very long. Came back and I formed the Atomic Rooster. Robert Stigwood was the manager. Vincent Crane I brought back with me, and he was on organ, Hammond organ, L100 or the C3, I forget what he played. And he was the original writer in The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. And, you know, the Atomic Rooster did incredibly well. In actual fact, just after I left them, they had a number one single called Tomorrow Night, which I had recorded. They had to re-record it with their new drummer. So I was sitting with Greg and Keith in the rehearsal room and thinking, I wonder if I've made a mistake, my old band sitting at number one today. But, you know, it wasn't a mistake. I'm very pleased that I joined Greg and Keith, and it worked out very well.
Yeah, I mean, the Atomic Rooster had a couple of great songs. I mean, Devil's Answer was wonderful, as well as Tomorrow Night. So a couple of big records there. Now, looking at Asia, I mean, 1982, you know, it's the album of the year. It's amazing when you get a debut album, Carl, and it becomes not only that as your debut album, but actually the album of the year in America, all in one go.
Yeah, we were exceptionally lucky. It was the right time, the right place, the right musicians. It was the beginning of MTV. David Geffen, who was running the Geffen label at the time, had great connections with the television people. And it was the beginning of videos, Godley and Cree making various videos for us. So the whole thing just came together very naturally. And there were some very poppy songs on there, extremely radio-friendly songs. Plus, there were a few sort of prog-type, you know, Wildest Dreams, Time Again, type songs, which, you know, weren't super radio friendly, but were more in depth, a bit more sort of, I won't say intellectual, but a little more sort of involved. And there were things which were a bit heavier, like Soul Survivor. So all in all, it was a well-balanced album, but nevertheless, Heat of the Moment was number one, and Only Time Will Tell was in the top five. And Soul Survivor was a huge radio hit, so the album did very well. Sold about 4.5 million, I believe.
Absolutely. Yeah, might have even been bigger than that. Now, I've been very very lucky over the last...
No, that was then. It's all, out of the box, it just flew away. It was unbelievable.
It did. Now, I've been very fortunate. Jeff Downs has been a guest on the show twice. Steve Howell was a guest about 6 weeks ago, talking about things that were going on with Yes. And the late John had been a guest on my radio show 3 times. And he came into one of the studios I was at in Portsmouth. As we know, about 2015, I think that would have been, and came in and spent 2 hours with us. And it was wonderful to talk to him about everything connected with Asia.
Oh, you're a lucky boy then, aren't you?
I count myself extremely lucky, Carl Palmer, to meet all you guys one way or another, either in person or over the studio airwaves. But formed it all together. The only person I never got to talk to was Greg Lake. And, of course, he was part of what we're talking about here with Asia in Asia at the Budokan. And the Budokan is an incredible place, isn't it? And they're very different in their culture, in what they do. I mean, I remember talking to Paul Carrick, who was going to play there with Eric. And I said to him, you know, remember to stock up your merchandise department. He said, why is that? I said, well, the Japanese culture, to my knowledge, and I've been there a couple of times myself, is that they want to walk away with something. So it could be a baseball cap, a T-shirt, a CD, or whatever they can get. He said, oh, I never knew that. Better tell them. So you must have found it exactly the same way, that when you play there, they want a bit of merchandise.
Well, it's the same as most concerts these days. I mean, people are looking more for things, you know, more than a T-shirt and a CD these days. They want better merchandise, as you say. It's not just the Japanese. It's a global thing. Merchandise has been a big part of our business for many years. It's paid for a lot of expenses, you know, a lot of travel, hotel expenses, gas. So, it's always been a big part. And it's something which you have to keep on developing. You can't keep going out with the same old stuff. In Japan, yes, they do buy incredibly large amounts, but they do in America, to tell you the truth. And this particular box set, obviously, is going to sell incredibly well in Japan. It's something that they've probably already got something similar to it. But this new one, I know that will be a big seller there. And in actual fact, I know that the numbers are looking very healthy indeed. I mean, you've got a box set here that's got 2 vinyls in it.
Yes.
It's got a CD in it. It's got a DVD in it. It's got a beautiful envelope full of, like, a white envelope, cardboard envelope full of great photographs. Some posters. So all in all, it's a good package. Roger Dean was involved an awful lot. There's a beautiful enamel badge of the actual triangle, which is the Asia logo. So, you know, there's some tickets which were made up, some ticket stubs which obviously aren't the original. We've reproduced them. But just to give the whole sort of feeling of what the concert was all about. And obviously when you put the DVD on, if you've still got a DVD player, which I have, it's a great experience to go through, you know. And Greg Lake did a great job. John Wetton couldn't be there, unfortunately, because of certain illnesses that he had, which he overcome in later years. But it was something we couldn't take a chance. And we didn't want to risk his health any further. Satellite time had been booked, and Greg Lake stepped up to the plate and did a great job. And there you have it in the box set.
Whoever put it together needs a medal.
Well, that's to do with the record company BMG. John Wilson is like heads up the label there. And, you know, we had most of this artwork. We had most of the pictures. It was a case of just, you know, putting it together. And we worked closely with them. All in all, it does celebrate the anniversary, which actually will be next year when we go back to Japan to play at the Budokan again. So this was one of the very first satellite broadcasts, as you know. I mean, they've done them for sort of like boxing events and things, but not a lot of musical events were done the same way. But anyway, this came off superb. Camera work was good, and all of the audio technology was just rolling off as smooth as what you can imagine. So all in all, the package is a great package. Very proud of it.
It's a wonderful box set. I mean, when it arrived, I mean, Sharon had said to me, you're going to love this when it arrives, and make sure you talk to Carl about it. And it's so impressive. I mean, the way that it is, and the photographs are absolutely brilliant that you've got there. So who decided, Carl, that you were going to do the MTV satellite part of it, recording it out there? How did that come about?
That came about, as I mentioned to you earlier, via David Geffen. David Geffen, who had the Geffen label and works with, you know, with DreamWorks making movies and films now, he had started off being a manager of various bands in America. Then he wanted to start his own record label, and this was the beginning of it. And he had a great connection with the MTV, which was just starting, and he said, you know, we've got to make videos. It's the new way of promoting music on air with film. So Godley and Cream were involved with us, and they did things like, you know, Only Time Will Tell. They did Soul Survivor. They did the hit Heat of the Moment. They did all of this, and that sort of got us across very, very quickly in America. Don't forget now, you're getting music played on the television daily, all hours of the day, plus on the radio. So it's a double whammy, really, and people are very excited. And it was a perfect timing. This business is all about timing and perception, and we had the two things going for us at that time, and it worked out remarkably well. David then said, you know, if we're going to Japan, Asia in Asia, why don't we see if we can set up a satellite connection? Now, I don't know if you've ever bought any, but satellite time is incredibly expensive. It was then, and I doubt if it's much cheaper now, but it seemed the obvious way to use a vehicle like MTV, so that's what we did. We broadcast back into America from Tokyo, and that was the story, really. Yeah. David Geffen was the man who put it all together for us.
Yeah, and this was done in December of 1983, wasn't it?
Yes, this was the 6th of December, the actual recording at the Budokan. And, yeah, I mean, basically, there's the colour vinyls, by the way, in there. A 2LP original concert remix from the Master Tapes. You've got 2 CDs from MTV Telecast concerts. It is one of the most comprehensive packages, box sets, that I've ever come across. And, you know, I've had a few ELP box sets out there, which have been excellent as well. But this one is quite an exciting sort of thing to have, because I realised at the time that that was history in the making, the satellite broadcast via MTV back into America. Unfortunately, it didn't make it over here, but anyway, we've got the box set, we've got the DVD, they can all see it now, you know.
And people will want it. It's a wonderful thing. By the way, Carl, who devised the Asia logo, which I've always been impressed with?
Roger Dean has always been involved with all of the artwork. He came up with the idea. We came up with the name, and we didn't want the something. We just wanted one word, and we particularly liked Asia because it started with an A, ended with an A, which meant we could go for that triangle type of graphic, which Roger fell straight into, and then he came up with the final design, and that was it. And he's worked with the band ever since. As I say, he worked on the cover and the artwork for the whole of the box set. It's been an absolute pleasure working and seeing him again. In actual fact, I saw him about 2 weeks ago whilst I was on tour. He came to one of the concerts.
Wow. And you said you're going back to Japan next year?
We've been invited to go back and celebrate the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
So who knows? It could be December the 6th, 2023. We're at the Budokan again. You know, we're talking about it now. They've approached us, and that's always a good sign, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So what are the plans for Carl Palmer for the rest of 2022?
So right now I go into some promotional period in July. I won't be doing much in the month of May except the editing. I've got a new Emerson, Lake and Palmer show, which I'm putting together for the end of the year, which consists of Greg Lake and Keith Emerson live at the Royal Albert Hall. And I'm going to have them on these huge sort of 14-by-8-foot screens each side of the stage. And I'm going to play in situ with them, along with my band as well. The footage has been released many years ago. It was on Sanctuary Records, and Sanctuary sold out to Universal, and this particular release from the Royal Albert Hall got lost in the wash. So it's great footage, and the actual the audio part of it is just outstanding. So I figured this would be better than trying to reproduce holograms. Why not reproduce a live concert that we actually did? So that's what we're doing, and I've done all of the editing except for Fanfare for the Common Man, and once that's completed and comes back to me, me at the end of this week. We'll have about seven pieces I can actually perform with Greg and Keith in a live situation. You'll see me on the screen as well. I'll be in the middle of the stage. Plus, I'll play other pieces with my band, with Paul Bielatovich, Simon Fitzpatrick, such as Tarkus, you know, Hoedown,
yes.
Amina Baran or whatever. And we'll have a good sort of hour 30, hour 45 minute show. So it should be quite interesting.
I'll bet it will be. In fact, on the radio show that I've recorded tonight, we're actually playing The Gnome from Pictures of the Exhibition. And it's a great pleasure to be playing Emerson, Lake and Palmer on the show.
Well, let me tell you that, unfortunately, I can't play Tarkus with Keith and Greg, but things like Welcome Back My Friends, Knife Edge, Paper Blood, Lucky Man, Fanfare, I can, and there's another couple of others. But things like Tarkus just have ended up being a bit too complicated. I will be playing that on stage, that's for sure. But in the future, when I take this particular set, this particular stage idea to the second level, I will use footage of pictures at an exhibition, and we'll play the music with my band, and then I'll intercept it with Greg singing and playing his J200, so we'll amalgamate the two sort of areas that way. So there's a lot of room for development with this project. If it gets accepted by the public, which I hope it does, then, you know, we can develop it a lot further. Right now, it looks very, very cool. It's much better than trying to put a hologram together. This is them actually playing, and from that point of view, because the quality is so high, I'm hoping that it's going to work out well. I will be trying it in America first, that's for sure, because that's basically where my team is. So we'll see how it goes, and if it all goes well, then we'll be bringing it back, who knows, to the Royal Albert Hall, maybe.
Yeah, well, that'll be great. I'm actually going to the Royal Albert Hall on the 2nd of July. I'm going to go and see Frankie Valli. Now, it's incredible to think. I don't know if you've ever seen the Jersey Boys movie or anything to do with the Four Seasons.
Yeah, I did.
But there's a wonderful remark in there which has come back, not to haunt him, but when the member of the Four Seasons lost a load of money to the bookmakers, Frankie offered to bail him out. Now, remember, that was 1966. And he makes that wonderful statement, Carl, that says, based on paying out $1 million to get him out of trouble, I'd probably still be working when I'm 80. Well, when he plays the Royal Albert Hall on the 2nd of July, he won't be 80, he'll be 89.
There you go. There you go. Well, Jeff, listen, it's been great talking to you. You know I've got someone else coming right in now in about 4 minutes' time.
Okay, no problem.
I'm going to have to leave you, unfortunately.
No problem. Thanks very much for your time. I'm going to go out with Soul Survivor because I think that's absolutely wonderful. And I know John Wetton loved it as well, and he wrote it with Jeff Downs.
It was one of his favourite. It was a great song. And I do thank you for the interview and all your enthusiasm about the box set and stuff. And hopefully we can do this again another day.
Thank you very much, Carl. Great talking to you.
Okay then, take care, bye.
All the best.
Bye.
And we're going to go out with the wonderful Soul Survivor, Asia, from Live at the Budokan.
Thank you. Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.